Hi, I'm Aisha Bacon. This podcast is brought to you by Fragranza, a world of fragrances, the finest quality international perfumes available locally. Head over to www.fragranza.co.za to choose from 8,000 perfumes delivered directly to you. Your fragrance is your signature. It tells your story. Now listen to mine. Bake the podcast. On this episode, I speak to award-winning mommy blogger and namesake Aisha O'Reilly about motherhood and how people should speak about the good and the bad of pregnancy. Enjoy. So Aisha and I were just talking about bladder control because we're both moms. Did you give natural birth or Caesar?
I did Caesar both times.
Both times. Yeah. And you also had bladder control issues.
Something that they don't really give you a heads up for.
No one tells you about that. Nobody tells you. Do you know how many times I've peed in my pants? My brother-in-law finds it hilarious.
Of course he would. He's a guy.
He's like, always like, he sends me these videos of Kourtney Kardashian saying she peed in her pants. And he's like, I thought of you. Ha, ha, ha. Like, and he'll be like, don't laugh too hard. Or
oh, gosh.
If I sneeze, he'll be like, did you pee in your pants? And I'm like, yes, I did. Because I gave natural birth and I'm sure it just ripped out my insides. Because my bladder is just, I have incontinence now.
Yeah.
And the gynecologist said there is a surgery you can do.
I've heard of it, yeah.
But he said it's really invasive and like scary. So he's like, yeah, just do Pilates. So that's what I'm doing now.
So Pilates for how long? Did he give
you
an idea?
I don't know if it's going to work. I know a friend of mine. She's got three kids. I'm not sure what her birthing story was. She's also got it after having been pregnant.
Yeah.
And she's like, my eldest kid is like 13. She's like, I still have incontinence. I was like, what? 13 years?
Oh,
like,
no.
Do I have to go through this for 13 years?
It's such a mission.
It's such a mission. Being a woman is hard.
It's so hard. Even like before I left, you know how I was saying earlier, I need to make sure that I, you know, have like my little loo run.
Yes.
And thankfully, I remembered my breast pads this morning because I usually forget them.
Oh my gosh, I forgot about breast pads.
I did this last week and I leaked.
That's
in public.
And I'm just like, what's your response? Okay, this is so funny. What do you do when you leak when you leak breast milk in public? Like what's your normal response?
Well, the thing is it only happened last week.
For the first time. Oh wow, you're lucky.
Yeah. Cause I mean, every other time I've been very good about remembering my pads. Like the first time around with Kai, I'd always remember my pads because I was just that mom. I was always, you know, anxious and had a little checklist and whatever. But this time around, because I just hadn't leaked in a long time.
Okay, yes.
And hadn't been going out, obviously, because of COVID.
Yeah.
So it wasn't one of those things that was top of mind.
Yeah.
So there I was walking around. I'd dropped Kai off at swimming lessons and I was running around doing some errands. And it was only when I got back into the car that I saw I had a patch.
Oh my
gosh. So I hadn't even noticed. I'm like, when did that happen? I don't know when that happened. So I was like, okay, well, I'm in the car already. Hopefully people just thought it was a spill.
Yeah. I've had it happen like gradually in front of somebody.
Oh gosh, what happened?
And I could feel it happening
to
me. And I was like, oh my gosh, I forgot to put breast pads in. And I'm actually feeling that tingle now, even though I don't have any breast milk. It's like you feel that like let down.
Yeah,
it's like it's a tingle. And you're like, oh, shoot. And I was sitting in front of someone and I didn't know what to do. So I just covered my chest with my arms while I'm talking to this person.
Yeah.
And then made up an excuse to go home because
I was
like, oh, my gosh, I'm leaking. Because it just looks really weird when it just starts like building up from that one point into like a big circle. Like, I don't mind if it's a wet patch and then it's like you can say it's a spill because it actually is. It's a milk spill.
Yeah.
And then the smell as well that you get.
Exactly. And depending on what color, like, clothes you're wearing, you'll have that little ring.
Yes.
So I'm just like, how do you explain it to men?
Yeah.
Or a woman who has never, because for me, before I became a mom, I didn't even know that happened.
Yeah, I had no idea.
So I'm guessing the only people who would kind of know if I was walking down the street with a patch on my breast was like a fellow
other moms.
Yeah, a fellow mom.
And they would definitely be like, oh,
shame.
And I think dads would know too, because dads would be like, oh,
yeah.
I remember those.
I think, yeah, like present dads for sure. Yeah.
My husband used to, when I was breastfeeding and you get that build up of milk and like it crystallizes kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's kind of sore. I never had mastitis, but I was like very sore and I needed to pump. And I remember the first couple of months, I was just so tired. We were all so tired.
Yeah.
And you literally sit there and pump for me with a little hand pump.
Oh.
And I would just be like, oh, I'm so sad. Like, why does it have to crystallize? Oh. This is so mean.
That's so sweet and of him, though.
And he would sit and pump. Yeah. Oh. He kind of liked doing it because he was like, it's like so weird and nerdy. It's like, oh, this is weird pumping. And exactly. You squeeze it and milk comes out. It's like milking cow. Some of my best memories with my husband is even pumping my breast milk and we're just talking in the bathroom, like, yeah, you know, with the hot cloth and having a chat.
Oh, gosh, if that's not bonding, yeah. I don't know.
He's pretty cool. What's your husband like with, you know, that kind of stuff? Like the gross, not the gross stuff, but like the real stuff.
Let's the real stuff, yeah. I think that's a better word for it, I guess. But it is kind of gross. Some of the stuff is gross.
Like some of the stuff's gross to me, eh? I don't mind if he would pull his nose up. He never does. But I mean, if he did... If he was grossed out, I always ask him, like, is this gross?
Yeah.
And he's like, no, absolutely not. And I'm like, okay, this is gross for
yeah,
me.
Yeah, for me. he's good. He is so good. He's great with pretty much everything. And he just laughs about it.
Okay.
I think the first time around, though, because it was obviously it was a shock to me, a lot of the stuff that was happening in my body from pregnancy onwards. So it was a shock to him as well. He's just like, is this normal? Is this... You know?
Is this us now?
Yeah, is this okay? But after the first time round, like this time, he's just so like chilled with it, you know? The pregnancy farts.
Yeah, oh gosh.
Especially the first trimester, the first time round, he was like, okay, this is... Is this normal? We need to ask the doctor about this, like, later, you know, because he really, yeah, shame.
I always tell people, I'm like, I can't help it if I fart. Like, I literally can't help it right now. My best friend and I, when we're in the room together, she's always like, okay, I just need to, she clears the room first. She's like, right, you can fart and don't apologize afterwards. She's like, just fart and leave it. I know you're pregnant. Because every time I fart, I'm like, oh my God, I just farted. I'm so sorry. I'm pregnant. And she's like, no, no, you don't need to. And we know. We know where you're at.
That's so sweet.
Yeah. Wayne doesn't mind, but I hate like farting around me. I find it like.
When other people fart around you.
Yeah. I find it so jarring. I'm like, it reminds me of, because I have an older brother.
Yeah.
It reminds me of my childhood and just farting around me. It's so grotesque and rude. I'm like, oh, like, why would you come into my room and fart? It's just rude. So I always tell my husband, like, please don't fart around me. I hate it. It's like. Upsets me.
Yeah.
And then now when I'm pregnant, I'm like, oh,
I'm
like,
sorry.
So embarrassed. And he's like, yeah, it's just farting, like whatever.
It's no big deal.
But no one knows. And I was reading your blog earlier.
Yeah.
About the real side of motherhood.
Yeah.
Nobody warns you about pregnancy. All you see is cute little baby bumps, outfits, jumpsuits, like people holding their bellies. You know, I told my friend this other day, I'm like, we don't hold our bellies because we're like bonding with our baby. We're doing it because we're like super gassy and we're trying to like move the gas around so you don't fart in public. Like that's why women are walking around rubbing their tummies. It's not because we're like having a beautiful bonding moment at Pick and Pay.
No.
No.
No. For me, usually it was like just trying to calm my babies down.
Yes.
You know, because I had what my doctor called an irritable... What do you say? An irritable uterus or something like that?
Oh, whoa.
Yeah. So the kicking was not fun. You know, when people are like, oh my gosh, the baby's kicking. Yeah. And for me, I'm like, this is painful.
Really?
So yeah. So when my babies would move around and I'd feel their elbows and their knees, it was actually painful for me.
Oh my
gosh.
So
I would rub my bellies just to calm them down a little bit.
Stop moving.
You know, like just chill out. Yeah. So that was my reason.
I'm not at the stage where she's moving. I don't know when anyone's going to listen to this. So I'm actually pregnant. I'm 6 months pregnant, to anyone listening. So I'm not at the stage where she's moving that much.
Yeah.
So it's very gentle still. But I think it gets to that point. I can't even remember where they start like actually kicking you and you can see it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For me, it was usually around month 7 or so.
Yes.
7. And then 8 was like the proper like tumbling and,
gosh,
you know.
It's a hard one.
Yeah.
8 months pregnant is super, super hard.
It's tough.
Getting through those, like that last month. Mm. How long were you pregnant for? 40 weeks?
I was pregnant with both of them, 38 weeks.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So
that's
38
a nice
weeks
time.
On the dot and then 38 weeks in like a day with Kenzo.
Okay.
Yeah.
I was pregnant with Khalid for 37 weeks. And I felt like, how do women do this for 41 and 42 weeks?
I know.
Because it must be so uncomfortable.
Those extra weeks are just like... I mean, by the time at least for me, by the time I got to about 34 weeks, I'm like, okay, I'm done now. Yeah. I'm ready. You know, can the baby just come now?
Yeah. That last month is always the longest month of your life.
It is tough.
And then you get into the fourth trimester and all of that sort of a new change, like the milk and the body stuff. And when I was reading your blog, I saw that you spoke about, you know, accepting your body after having kids. What was that journey like for you with your first and then with your second? I like to kind of ask moms, because the first time is quite jarring, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it was a complete mess. I was a complete mess.
Yeah.
You know, like I was saying, from the get-go, I just felt completely blindsided by everything that was happening to my body.
Yeah.
Because exactly what you're saying, no one talks about this stuff. I mean, it's getting better now.
Yeah.
I'd have to say that, especially with social media and everything. But before this, the only images and messages that I got about motherhood, pregnancy, everything was, you know, the Hollywood movies.
Yeah.
The few, one or two friends that were pregnant, they didn't say anything. They're just like, oh, yeah, you know, it was a bit tough in the first trimester, but then I'm okay.
Yeah.
But they don't go through the details, nothing. So every single thing, I was that woman who was like, is this normal? You know, I'm feeling horrible. I'm feeling gross. I'm feeling like my mouth tastes of metal. Is that normal?
Yeah.
You know, so everything was, and then the emotions that came with it. And you know how it is, like, everyone jokes about, you know, women being pregnant. Ha ha, it's so funny that they're so emotional. I didn't think it was funny,
it's
you know,
funny
while I
all.
Was in it. I was like, this is horrible because I feel so out of control and I feel so stupid and, you know, I'm forgetting stuff and I'm clumsy and I'm feeling fat, you know, like, so it was just a real, the best way I can describe it was there was, I had a lot of outer body experiences, you know, like sort of looking back at my kind of old self and thinking, huh, you know, are we ever going to get back to this?
Yeah.
So, you know, so by the time I had Kai, my firstborn, I had accepted that I'm no longer in control.
Yeah.
You know, and
how old was Kai when you accepted that?
No, it was just before I had him.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was literally the day before.
It's so funny. As soon as you accept it, you give birth.
Yeah.
It literally takes you almost nine months to accept.
Get to that point. Yeah.
Like, that's the most hard part about pregnancy that we don't talk about. And a lot of moms I know that struggle with fertility have this guilt because they really don't want to say it. Because it's like, oh, you know, we've gone through this long journey of trying to get pregnant. And then there's that guilt that you sit with, like, I should be grateful. I should be enjoying it. And I really would love us to get to a place of modern motherhood where we say, like, pregnancy is freaking hard.
It's
and
hard.
Some people do enjoy, there are moments of absolute bliss that we totally enjoy. You know, like that second trimester when you get your energy back and you're not sick anymore, you're not tired. It's there's these blissful moments, but for the bulk of it, it's hard work.
It's hard.
And it's
really hard.
So adjusting.
Yeah.
You know, just the physical stuff, the emotional stuff. I find, I don't know if you were like this, but I'm very apologetic when I'm pregnant because I feel like I constantly have to apologize for forgetting things.
Mm.
The other day I was in the shower. And I usually, in Cape Town, we have water issues. So we put the water off when we wash our hair and stuff.
Yeah.
So I put the shower off and I was busy washing my hair. And I was like, oh, that's so weird. I can still hear the shower on. And I was wondering why I could hear the shower. And I'm looking around as I'm washing my hair. And I realized the tap on the basin is on from when I brushed my teeth.
Oh, right.
I'd left it on for so long. And I was like, oh my gosh, how did I do that? And I'm like, you know, my whole family is very water wise. And the whole of Cape Town is because of our water issues. And I felt so bad. I'm like, oh my gosh, I just wasted so many liters of water because I forgot to, when I rinsed my toothbrush, I forgot to close the tap, which is such a normal thing to do.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, this is like, and I messaged my husband and he was driving me to the airport from Joburg, and he, as we're leaving the house, he says, your bag's in the boot, right? And I was like, I think I put it in the boot. He's like, okay, just literally you need to check. So I jumped out, go check the boot, and I'm like, okay, it's in the boot. He's like, okay, good. He's like, just have to check on everything at the moment because you're so forgetful, and it makes you feel like kind of stupid.
Yeah, that's exactly it.
Yeah.
That's how I felt, and I was just like, you know, during that time I was angry. I am a very angry pregnant woman.
Okay.
Because I just sort of feel like, because I feel as women, we're really doing such a service.
Yeah.
By being pregnant, we're sacrificing our bodies, we're giving up like a lot of, you know, a bit of our careers in some cases and things like that. And I just kind of feel like all of that's forgotten about.
Yeah.
When a woman's pregnant, like I go out of my way to help a woman who's pregnant.
Yeah.
You know, maybe because, yes, I'm a woman and I can emphasize and I can empathize with her. But I kind of feel like the rest of society, especially men,
yeah,
they kind of just think, but this is what you do. You know, they kind of take it for granted. Like,
especially,
but what
are you older complaining men about?
Too. Yeah, like, it's no big deal. Why should you get special treatment? You're not disabled, you know?
I literally had an uncle say to me, you're pregnant, you're not sick.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
I was like, excuse me, have you ever carried a baby in you? Can it's I like my say? Wife has four kids. I'm like,
see, and they'll bring stuff like that up, you know, and
like just because your wife, you couldn't voice how she felt to you because you obviously clearly are a jackass.
Yeah.
I literally wanted to tell my uncle so much shit. I was like, you're an asshole. And your wife deserves better. And I was just like, you know what? Actually, I'm not going to have this argument with a 60-year-old man because he clearly doesn't understand what women go through.
But that's exactly it. So that angered me a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and it still does in a way. Obviously, it's a bit more calm because I'm not pregnant anymore.
Yeah.
But I feel very protective of mothers. You know, I really do. Of women who are trying to fall pregnant, women who are currently pregnant, who have just had babies, who have four kids or whatever it is, I feel very like, you know, so when I hear of people sort of judging or shaming moms or trying to make us feel bad for something that's so natural, you know, every woman does it. Like, you're not the first woman who's been pregnant. I get very kind of upset about that.
I hate the statement.
Yeah.
I see pregnant moms say it too. I know I'm not the first to have a baby. I'm like, you know what? This is your first experience. Yours, even if it's your fourth pregnancy or your fifth.
Yeah.
It's your first experience today. Yeah. This is different, and it's different each time.
Exactly.
So it's like, let's embrace that and actually hold mothers close and be there for and hold that space for them to be like, you know what, I'm having a really shitty day. I feel so emotional because I'm having another child. Like, I literally went to visit schools for Khalid, got into the car after the one school visit, and I said to my husband, like, I really just need to cry. I don't know why it's not coming out. And he was like, okay. And I said, he's like, well, are you sad? And I was like, I feel so emotional that my son's going to go to school.
Yeah.
And I'm having another baby and I feel sorry for him. And he's like, but he's going to love having a sibling. And I'm like, I know, but I just really want to cry about it. Like, it just feels like a lot because you're so, like, emotional.
Mm.
And it's so intense, you know. Everything feels like so much more.
It is a lot.
Yeah.
It's a lot. And that's the thing. I just feel like, you know, I came to that realization when I was pregnant with Kai. So, you know, when I was becoming a mom, that I was just like, wow, this whole experience, the whole process of literally building a human in my body is so powerful.
Yeah.
It's so powerful. But the reason why I don't think it has been given the sort of, you know, appreciation that it deserves is because it's the world is run by men.
Yeah.
And men, for them, they can't build a human.
Yeah.
You know, it's the one thing that we have over them, you know, just in terms of the actual power to continue the species, so to say. And so for me, I just had a bit of an aha moment. I'm like, that's why they've been for centuries, millennia, trying to keep us, you know, in our places, you know, keep us down because they need us, you know? So I had this sort of revelation where I was just like, that makes so much sense now. That's why they downplay all of our experiences. And that's why, you know, as women, we have to sort of fight so hard to be heard and to be seen. And, you know, you talking about your uncle, a similar thing happened with me when I was pregnant this time around with Kenzo. We were back home in Tanzania and, my husband is a very modern guy.
Yeah.
Okay? He's of the times. He cooks, he cleans, he takes care of the kids. Like, it's like, ain't no thing.
Yeah.
But in Tanzania, that's just unheard of.
It's like, what? It's like, where did you find him?
So my parents are like, they're fine with him, and they know how our marriage works. It's no big deal. But we were there with relatives around, and there was this one uncle as well, you know, I don't know how old he was, older. And I'd already spoken to Kev. I'm like, you know, are you okay for dinner? You know, I'd offered to serve him some, you know, a plate of dinner.
Oh, yeah. And serving your husband is a big thing.
Oh, yeah. It's huge. Yeah. Huge.
When my husband loves going to my grandmother's house because that's because when of he gets that. Served.
Yes.
Love, I'd love some tea. And I'm like, because I can't say no in front of my granny because it's just too much to explain. I'd rather just make the tea.
So when we're there, he knows his role. I know mine.
Yeah.
So it's fine. We play, you know, for those like two, 3 weeks we're in Tanzania. But my parents know the dynamic, you know, the real dynamic. But we're there and I'm like, you know, can I serve you a plate or whatever? He's like, no, babe, I'm fine for now. I'll help myself later. I'm like, okay, cool. Sharp. I got my food. I got Kai's food. We sat down. We ate. Now this uncle is sitting there. Everyone is eating except Kev. And he's just looking like, you know, his head is back and forth, back and forth. And then in Swahili, he asks, are you not going to serve your husband dinner?
Oh, my gosh.
And I was just like, you know, and it wasn't even it was just such a harsh delivery as well.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like a, hey,
by the way. How dare you, the man's starving, he might fall over.
You know, and I'm just like, he's going to help himself later. Ooh, that was, because obviously I speak to Kevin English.
Yeah.
They don't understand English. So they don't know what just happened in terms of.
So now you guys, in their minds, they're getting a divorce. This is big, a big deal. Because in my family, it's like, you don't serve your husband food.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, they're fighting.
It's huge.
Okay, this is a big deal.
Right.
She's denying him food. It's a big fight.
Wow.
Someone needs to speak to her. Like, and you get pulled to the side, like, is everything okay?
Wow.
It's like, oh gosh, guys, really, it's a spoon and a plate and you just need a dish. Like, it's not a big deal.
Look, I get it with, you know, their, how they know to do things, I guess, you know. And that's why me and Kev, whenever we do go home, we play into those roles and it's fine.
So just for context to our audience.
Sure.
You are in an interracial and intercultural relationship, right?
Yeah.
So, Kev is South African?
He's South African.
Okay.
Yeah.
And he's a white South African man.
Yeah.
And he sounds very cool. He's embracing a lot of difficult things. And you from Tanzania.
Yeah.
And your family only speaks Swahili.
Oh, no. So my immediate family, we speak English and Swahili because my dad's job, you know, throughout the years meant that we traveled all around the world.
How many languages do you speak?
I speak English, Swahili, a little bit of French, a tiny bit of Spanish.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. When I say tiny, I mean tiny.
It's okay. To me, you're Spanish now. In my mind, I'm like, she can say hola in Spanish.
Hola, gracias. So because of his job, I, you know, traveled the world with my family.
Yeah.
Well, not the world, but several countries.
Yeah.
And so that's where my accent comes from. Because people always ask me, they're like, but where did you pick up this accent then? So I just picked things up as I moved.
Yeah.
And then
you adapted.
Just adapted. And to cut a long story short, because it is a long story, I moved to South Africa when I was 16.
Okay.
And I went to boarding school here, and that's where I met my husband. So
at school?
Yeah, at school.
Wow.
We're high school sweethearts.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
I love high school sweetheart stories. I think it's so sweet and romantic.
People think it's corny, but...
Really? I love it.
Kev, my husband, he thinks it's the corniest thing.
So how old were you guys when you met?
So this is a thing now as well. He was 17, I was 18.
Okay.
We were in the same grade.
Okay.
So we're actually
at the same school.
Same school, same grade.
Oh my gosh, cute. So did you? Yeah. Oh, okay. I have so many questions. I went to an all-girls school.
Did you?
So there was no way for me, because I'm heterosexual, to have a high school sweetheart.
Right,
like, at high school.
Yeah.
So I always wondered, like, do you guys write love notes in at school? Like, do you buy each other gifts on Valentine's Day? Like...
We bought gifts. No, we didn't do Valentine's Day because by the time we started like seeing each other, I put that in quotes because it's not like you go on a date necessarily in boarding school.
Yeah.
But when we, I think we celebrated our 6 months anniversary and
I remember those.
Yeah, they were cute, right? So we did like, you know, gifts at that point. Okay. Yeah, yeah.
Because at a girls' school, all girls' school, we often dated boys who were at all boys' schools.
Right, yeah.
So my high school sweetheart, we would send each other, you could send roses or whatever. I don't know what we sent the guy. I think we also sent them roses.
Yeah.
Then you'd like say, you know, I need to send it to this person at this school. And then you'd pay for it and the school would send the flowers.
Oh, that's cute.
It was cute. But I was like, I was the friend that had a lot of pretty friends.
Yeah.
So a lot of guys were friends with me because they really liked my friends.
Oh, okay.
So I made sure that I got roses for Valentine's Day because it was such a thing at our school.
Yeah.
I would say like, okay, I'll put in a good word for you, but you have to send me a rose on Valentine's Day. It was like 10 rand and all the money goes to charity.
Yeah.
And they'd always be like, yes, of course, it's only 10 rand, you know. And then I'd come home with all these roses. It's a single red rose you get. So I'd come home with like so many roses and then my boyfriend would also get me roses. And my father would always be like, oh my gosh, so many guys are in love with you. I'm like, actually, 90% of these are from friends. Because I like made them send me roses so because they all like the same three girls in my friendship group. So I'd just be like, oh, well, I'm pumping you all out for roses.
That's so smart of you to come up with something like that.
I know. It's like, hey? I need to be popular. How can I do this? Yeah, because on Valentine's Day, we'd stand in the courtyard and they would call out your name. So they'd say, Aisha Baker, a rose from this person. And then I'd be like, yay. And everyone would always look at me like, wow, you get so many roses. I'm like, And yeah, my two girlfriends, I'd be like, okay, you just need to text this guy on Mixit if you don't mind.
But that's how you get this, like, almost, what do you call it? Social currency, isn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the more popular you seem, the more people are drawn to you.
Yeah.
You know, like.
And high school is very much about that for us. It's single-sex schools anyway.
Yeah.
It was very much about that.
Even with ours, which was, it was a, what do you call it again?
Co-ed.
Yeah, it was co-ed. It was like the only co-ed school in, it was in Grahamstown.
Okay.
So all of the other boarding schools were also, you know, all girls, all boys. Kingswood was the only co-ed one.
Okay.
Yeah. And that's how my husband chose the school, because his parents were just like, okay, we're sending you to boarding school and the only thing that you get to choose is which one.
Okay.
So he's just like, that one. It
so
has
how
girls.
Do you guys feel about boarding school as parents?
That's interesting. I think it's great, but only when the kids reach a certain age.
Okay, so what age would you recommend?
I'd say maybe 15.
Okay.
You know, the last couple of years of school. And the reason being, you know, being in boarding school, because I went when I was 16. I started when I was 16. And by that time, I was already pretty established in terms of, you know, the values that my parents wanted to instill in me.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't being swayed as much as, you know, maybe other people who had, there were girls and boys there who had been in boarding school since they were like six, you know, or 7 years old.
Oh, that makes me feel emotional. Yeah. I can't imagine Carly going to boarding school in like 3 years.
So I'm just like, and my own brother, so all of us, we're five in the family.
Okay.
All of us went to boarding school at some point.
Okay.
My oldest brother went the youngest. He went when he was five.
Okay.
And till this day, my brother's like 40 odd years old now. Till this day, my mom still regrets that. She's like, he was way too young. Yes. I sent him way too young. Because, you know, when you're in boarding school.
You know what's crazy is that your mother's got that guilt for like 40 years.
I know, right?
Motherhood guilt is the wildest experience. I don't know how to get rid of it.
It never leaves you.
It's like my ex-agent told me, we're still very good friends. She said to me, when you give birth to your child, you give birth to guilt. And she's like, it never leaves you. And it's so true. Motherhood guilt is crazy.
Yeah. And it comes in so many forms. Yeah. It comes all the time.
Because my mother-in-law, so my husband went to boarding school when he was 14. And my mother-in-law knew that was the best thing for him because he got a bursary to play cricket. And he became a professional cricket player. It was the best thing for his career and his life. But for her, she felt like she's letting go of her son too quickly. Yeah. And he never came back.
Yeah.
So he went to boarding school, he matriculated. And he moved on and he went into his career and he never came home again. So she said goodbye to her child at 13 and she still cries about it. Yeah. And my husband's 32 or 33, I'm not sure his age. I think he's 32. And she still cries about it. And and it's funny because we all have these guilty moments of like mistakes we've made or we feel we make as moms. And I'm sure our mothers feel that with us too. Yeah. But we won't talk, right? So our moms will maybe talk to us and be like, I shouldn't have forced you to get braids. Like that wasn't a good thing to do. Mm. Or with me, it's like my mom is like, I know I should have been more focused on your nutrition as a child. Like she always says that.
Yeah.
And it's something that I also try and I'm conscious about as a mom. Like what do I want to regret later, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have those moments?
Yeah. I do all the time, you know, because for me, you know how it is when you grow up, I don't know, maybe it was just me, but I kind of took note of the things that I'm like, when I become a mom, I want to do this different. Yeah. So the biggest thing for me was being emotionally attuned.
Okay.
Because I'm a very emotional person, you know, I can say that proudly now, but when I was growing up, it was really sort of dismissed and not really paid attention to. And sort of, you know, I was told often that, oh, you're so overly sensitive and you take things too personally and whatever. But that was just me trying to express my emotions, you know? And so for a long time that really sort of affected me growing up. But now as an adult, you know, I'm like, no, actually, that's who I am.
Yes.
And that's great. And I want to raise children who are also in tune with their emotions. You
I
know?
Saw you wrote about raising Kai at the time. I don't think you had Kenzo, but about emotional intelligence in your kids. And,
yes.
And you spoke a little bit about spanking, which when I was pregnant, spanking became illegal in South Africa.
Mm.
And it was such a big thing in my community and people spoke about it for weeks because it was like, how can they say we can't spank our kids? and then my baby was born and I was like, why would I want to spank this person?
Yeah.
Like, he's so sweet.
Yeah.
And I've never had a desire to hit my child.
Same.
But maybe that's because we come from a different time.
Yeah.
So how do you navigate, you know, Kai's tantrums and moments where it's like, oh my gosh, I could throw him out of the balcony. Like, he's being so terrible. Because, you know, they get terrible, these kids.
Oh, yeah.
Oh my gosh. These moments when you're like, really? Are you even from me? Like, do I know you?
Yeah.
Sometimes I want to say that to Carly. Like, do you know me? Excuse me.
Well, I don't say that, but I say, whose house is this?
Yeah.
And then he says, mommy's. And I'm like, and who's the boss? Mommy. I'm like, yeah, that's it. Like, that's it, you know? So it kind of puts him in his place, you know? But it's tough. It's really tough because there are times when I'm navigating my emotions, but now I have to navigate his.
Yeah.
So that's a lot for me.
And they're little people with big emotions.
I was about to say, his emotions are massive. Like, and so Kev jokes about it, but it's the truth. He gets that from me. Okay. So when he's angry, he's really angry.
Yeah.
And when he's happy, he's so happy. He's so excited. So he's big on all of them.
Okay.
So it's a case of me just trying to, there are times when, because I think also because he looks like me, I see little Aisha in him.
Yeah.
And so those are the moments that kind of make me sort of just take a step back and say, okay, you're dealing with a child. He's 4 years old. He doesn't understand a lot of this stuff. He's got these big emotions and he needs to, you know, express it. So I've been very conscious of empowering him with speech.
Okay.
You know, and really encouraging him to use his words. And I use that phrase, use your words, you know, when he's getting frustrated or whatever. And so now people, and I was laughing about it the other day, people are so surprised that Kai can just, in the middle of whatever's happening, be like, I'm feeling frustrated.
Aww.
Or he says, I don't like this, stop it.
Oh,
or, you know, so he's very
so
I'm really proud of that and I'm hoping to kind of keep nurturing that.
So did you teach him the phrases too? Because what I say to Khalid is, are you feeling sad? Are you feeling frustrated? Are you angry? Are you mad at mommy? And he'll say, yes, I'm mad at mommy. And I say, are you mad because mommy said you can't have any chocolate?
Yeah.
He says, yes, I'm mad at mommy because I can't have chocolate. So do you understand why you can't have chocolate? No.
No.
And I have to go, okay, you know, it's almost bedtime. It's 4 o'clock. If you have chocolate now, your brain's going to be buzzing like a bee and you won't be able. Like, I literally tell him these stories.
Yeah.
So now when we go to my mom's place and, you know, grandmothers and all the rules are out the window. So he knows he can get whatever he wants.
Yeah.
And I literally see him sneaking to my mom, like, to get another piece of candy or, like, a chocolate or whatever.
Yeah.
And I'm literally like, Khalid Parnell, and looks at me and goes, no, thank you, to my mom. And my brother-in-law was saying the other day, he's like, oh, do you ever shout at your kid? And I said, no, I don't have to because we talk.
Mm.
So he knows that I don't have to shout at him. I just have to say his name in a low tone. And I've trained him to know that mommy doesn't agree with that and you don't either.
Yeah.
Because you know it's not good for you.
Right.
Like, that's where I want to be with him.
Yeah.
But I think it's hard. I don't know if Kev's on board with you and that parenting style.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, that's good.
He's actually stricter than I am
okay.
with some things. You know, like he's more sort of, he doesn't give Kai as many chances as I
okay.
do.
You know? Do you think it's because Kai's like a boy and yeah, he's a firstborn and you just like melt?
Yeah.
That's what my husband tells me. He's like, you just give him so much rope. Like, he can just do whatever he wants. I'm like, no, he doesn't have rules.
Yeah. But he knows. He knows the difference between mommy and daddy,
yes,
right? Yeah.
For sure. Khalid, so Wayne's very strict.
Mm.
He grew up in a strict household with a lot of structure.
Yeah.
I grew up very, like, it was a party. My parents were very young when they had us.
Yeah.
My mom was 20 when she had my brother, and 25 when she had me, and 30 when she had my sister. So my sister's very well-rounded individual because my mom was like the right age, or she felt she was, you know, better equipped to be a parent at that stage. Whereas your early 20s, you're kind of still finding yourself.
Yeah.
So we had a party growing up, and coming to Wayne's family, I was like, well, there's a lot of rules here. Like, sitting down and having dinner at the table is like a thing.
Yeah.
So Wayne's quite strict, and we're still learning. Because we have different parenting styles. He's very strict and he's very much a because I said so.
Right.
So you'll say, Harley will say, why? And he says, because I said so.
Yeah.
And I said to him, these modern kids, you can't say because I said so. That gives him leeway to be like, oh, so I said no, so I can do what I want to do then.
Yeah.
I mean, like, he needs an explanation.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, and he says, like, in my day, you know, your parents just showed you the wooden spoon and you went to the table.
Yeah.
And I'm like, yeah, well, it's not our childhood anymore. Like, I never got spanked, my brother did. And they also had the wooden spoon, the slipper, the belt.
Yeah.
It was those, like, threats.
Yeah.
And you can't threaten kids now. And I mean, if you hit your child, they'll literally tell you, like, you're hitting me and it's not nice.
Yeah.
And that's not, you don't want to hear that.
No ways. For you to hear that as a parent is just like, oh, you know?
Yeah.
So, naughty corner. I do naughty corner.
Okay, you do naughty corner?
Yeah, it's my saving grace. It's the only thing at the moment that's like, it's either that or...
Does he listen to naughty corner?
Yeah, he does. Yeah.
I can't get Holly to listen to the naughty corner. He'll run away from the corner. I'm like, oh, I have no control. I try and do time out in the bedroom.
Yeah.
Because someone told me it's fine if you do time out in the bedroom and they read a book or something because they actually just need to calm down.
Mm.
So we do that, but he can reach the door handle now, so it's another thing.
Yeah. I think it just also depends on what it is that they did.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, I only usually send him to the naughty corner if he's literally not listening to me or he's doing something dangerous or whatever it is.
Yes.
Not necessarily when he has a tantrum.
Okay.
So when he has a tantrum, I deal with it a bit differently. I'm a bit more like, okay, talk to me, what's happening? Or I'll tell him, okay, it's okay to be mad at mommy, but you don't shout at mommy.
Okay.
Or it's okay for you to be angry or frustrated, but you don't throw things, you know? So I try to just talk him down a little bit and maybe do something calm. Like what used to work a lot is, I can't do it now because Kenzo's on my hip all the time now.
Gosh.
But before, when it was just Kai, I'd read to him.
Yeah.
So when he was in the middle of one of those really hectic fits, because reading is our thing, you know, it's how he understands love.
I never tried that before.
Yeah. So I would hold him really tight. There's something comforting for, you know, it's almost like when you swaddle a baby kind of thing.
Okay.
So I'd hold him really tight and I'd tell him, it's okay, mommy's here, you know, let it out.
Yeah.
And then once he's starting to calm down, I'd read to him. And then he gets distracted or whatever it is, he kind of like, you know, goes through it and then it's fine. So that really worked for me. Whereas now, because he's four, he can understand... You know, he can sort of understand the consequences thing. If you do this one more time, mommy's going to do this. You know?
So it gets to a consequence stage.
Yeah,
That's cool. Okay, that's very positive for me because I'm in the three-nager because Harley's turning three in May.
Yeah.
And he's literally a three-nager. I'm like, he says to his dad, you don't trust me. Trust me. Like, if you want something. Because I think his dad says it to him. So he'll be like, I need a chocolate egg, like an Easter egg. And he'll be like, trust me, daddy. You don't trust me. And I'm like, Holly,
that's,
you know,
so cute.
Like, we can't trust you on chocolate because you're not trustworthy when it comes to chocolate. As we're closing off, I just want to ask you, with regards to motherhood, what surprised you most? I know this is a loaded question because there's so many surprises.
Oh, wow.
Most about motherhood now that you've got two kids.
Now that I've got two kids, geez. I think now I would say how much I'm really genuinely enjoying it.
Okay.
That was a huge surprise for me. It's still a surprise. I still can't believe I'm actually saying it because I kind of felt like, especially the first time around, it was something that I had to say.
Okay.
Because people expect you to
say it. I love being a mother. Yeah, I love it. Secretly dying inside.
It's all unicorns and rainbows.
Yeah.
But exactly that. Secretly, I'm just like, oh my gosh, what have I got myself into?
Yeah.
But now that I think I've gone through it, and this is what I think I was saying to you in the podcast episode that you featured on for my show.
Yes.
That I've got Kai. He's the proof of the whole concept.
Yes.
You know? So he survived.
Yes.
We did okay. Obviously, our job isn't done there, but I can do this. So I'm feeling much more confident.
Okay.
I'm feeling much more like at peace. You know, I'm finding little teeny weeny moments of just pure joy with my children.
Yeah.
And I honestly didn't ever think that I was going to get to that place.
Yeah.
I used to think it before I became a mom because that's all I saw. Because
you visualize and imagine what it would be like.
Yeah. And then I became a mom and it was just this tornado of everything. And I was just like, this is it. This is motherhood then.
And
you know,
firstborn has this thing with you where they kind of, I say, they break you up. You're like a...
Yeah, completely.
You're like a Lego piece of art. And they literally come in and they break all the pieces apart.
Yeah.
And I have to redesign the whole thing.
Yeah.
I mean, from top to toe, like you spoke about. And I love your blog because you really, really go into these topics. You talk about, you know, the body and what's happening with your body, your personality changes, your identity is completely shifted. And I think a lot of the times with the first child, and if you only have one child, it can be such a shocking experience.
Yeah.
And that's why I asked you, what surprised you the second time?
Yeah.
Because I always feel like the moms say the second time it's more joy. It's harder in the beginning, I think.
I think probably the pregnancy was tough because I wasn't just able to just rest. I had to still be a mother to Kai.
Yeah.
That was tough.
Yeah.
That was really tough.
That's what I'm finding the most difficult. I'm very much about sleep hygiene now where I'm like, okay, I go to sleep like at 8. We spoke about this on your podcast too. Yeah. I go to sleep early and I wake up early to be a good person to myself first and then to Harley, because I know I would not be able to be pregnant. Yeah. Like, sometimes I stand there and I'm like, oh my gosh, why is this so hard this time?
Yeah.
The first time I wore high shoes and stuff, I can't even rock that. I literally am wearing boots everywhere.
Yeah.
I'm like, this is a look. It's like a old Doc Martin look, you know?
And you rock it and it's fine. Whatever you're comfortable with the second time around. I think the first time around was still that sort of trying to still be like my old me.
Yes.
You know? And now it's just sort of like, it's fine and it'll be okay.
And then I'll ask you one other, just a fun one.
Sure.
What's one of the most like annoying, like grates your nipples things that you see about motherhood on social media?
Oh, goodness. Oh, you've thrown me here. about motherhood. I would definitely say, I don't know if it necessarily grates my nipples, but it makes me sad.
Okay.
Will that count?
Yes, that counts.
It makes me sad when I see women or I hear of women who are apologetic about everything that they have to do as a mother and as a wife.
Okay.
You know, there was this one post that comes to mind, and I talked about it in one of my Instagram posts where this woman, look, I don't think she meant it. It wasn't ill intentioned or anything.
Yeah.
But she was apologizing. It was like an open letter to her husband. She was apologizing to him that she wasn't able to, you know, tend to him because she's tending to the newborn. You know, so she was very much like, I'm sorry that I didn't do this, and I'm sorry I'm not the same wife, and I'm sorry this, and that for me it just yes, actually,
yeah,
it does grate my nipples,
your nipples, right?
Because I'm like, how much is expected of us?
Yeah.
You know, that we have to
split. How much is too much?
Yeah. We have to split ourselves almost equally amongst like our husband, our kids, our families, our, you know, like our blood families, our first families and stuff. Like, there's nothing left for us.
Yeah.
And the idea of us, like what you were saying before, you know, taking time out for ourselves is like looked down on, yeah, or it's shamed, it's judged. And for me, that really irritates me, because I'm just like, why can't the husband also step up to the plate?
Yes.
You know, it's his child too.
Yeah.
You know, so for me, I know at the end of the day, everyone's marriage works differently. Everyone has different dynamics and all of that. And I think as long as you're both on the same page about things and it's not at the woman's detriment.
Yes.
I just don't like this idea of pushing women so far to the edge that even their mental health gets affected by it.
Yeah.
And their happiness gets affected. All in the name of being a good wife and a good mom.
Yeah. And my thing about that also irritates me. But the phrase that really grates my nipples is like, I'm a strong mom.
Yeah.
I'm like, what? No, I don't want to be strong. I'm tired of being strong.
Yeah.
I don't want to be strong. No, I'm not doing it. Mm. Like, I'm going to tell you now, I'm not strong, actually. This is like my limit.
Yes.
This is what I can do. You know, sometimes I tell my husband, like, I'm not doing bath time. Because, and I know I committed to it and I said, this is my thing. And but tonight, no,
yeah.
I can't. I'm not strong enough today.
Yeah.
And I don't want to be strong all the time. And I often say that women of color have this thing we raised upon where it's like, you're so strong. You're a strong brown woman. You,
yeah.
I mean, we've been doing this for generations. We carry the world on our shoulders. And I just decided, like, actually, no, I'm tired of being, like, yeah. I don't want to, I'm ending this now.
Yeah.
I don't want to be the strong brown woman who takes it all on, you know, and she does everything. And behind every man is a strong woman. I'm like, no, actually, we just walk side by side and we're both weak, actually.
Yeah, why is all of that placed on me?
Yes.
And I didn't consent to this.
Yes, I'm not a camel. Like, I'm a person. Let's just share the load, yeah?
Yeah.
And life's tricky. And we should kind of do it together. Let's do it together. And let's kind of have that village concept of saying to our friends and our family, like, I'm not okay. I don't want to cook anymore. I'm just not, it's not working for me. I've got two babies and I'm spent.
I'm tired.
Yeah.
Or I need saying, help.
Yes.
Yeah.
Or a day off.
Yeah.
No one ever offers. I had a funny enough story. I had a day off. When I got to Joburg, my best friend was here as well.
Yeah.
And we went to lunch.
Yeah.
And we were so happy. She doesn't have kids, but there was nobody calling me, asking me, like, hi, babe, I'm so sorry to interrupt you, but do you know where my... And I'm like, oh, I said I'm going to lunch with a friend. Or like, mommy, mommy, mommy. Because usually when she comes over, my son wants her attention too. He's like, Auntie Lisa, look at my... And we're like, we can't have a conversation because she's here visiting everybody.
Right.
And my husband's like, oh, Lisa, did I show you this new thing? And she was like, oh my gosh, we lost it. We had just lunch, the two of us, and we're just talking about random stuff.
Yeah.
It's not to do with our families or drama. It's just like... interesting, we're talking about art and stuff. We were like, oh, this is so cool, like, who are we?
Wasn't that nice?
So I recommend this to every mom. Just have, like, you know, tell your partner or get someone to help if they can, and just have like a lunch with a friend where you just don't talk about motherhood or kids,
and don't
if you
feel don't want guilty to. About it.
Yes, that's
don't feel
the
guilty
best
about
part.
It because if you leave your kids with someone who you trust, their dad, an option, you know. What are you feeling guilty for?
Yeah.
You know? But now that you said that, can I just add as well, another thing that grates my nipples is exactly this whole, like, where are your kids?
Yeah.
Oh, you're here.
Who's watching the kids?
It's like, he's with his dad.
I actually say annoying stuff, like, he's in the car by himself. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm not sure where he is. Probably walking around.
I said, I'm not sure where he is, actually. Thanks for reminding me, you know? Like,
I go, I don't know where he is.
Men don't get asked these questions.
No, never.
They never
ask who's looking after your kids. Or I don't know why people need to know who's looking after them. What would I leave them just with the dogs?
Some random, random person.
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. Kev is babysitting. He's like, no, he's not babysitting. He's taking care of his kids.
He's parenting like that's, I do that's every it. Day.
Yeah.
Gosh. Well, Aisha, thank you so much for coming on to my podcast.
Thank you.
Don't you just want to plug your podcast really quick so people can listen, and then also your blog and Instagram?
Yes. Okay, so my podcast is called The Whole Mama Show. And Aisha features on it as well, episode 7 of season 2. And yeah, it is basically all about the untold stories of motherhood, the good, the bad, the ugly, the often unshared raw moments. So that podcast is the love of my life at the moment. It's just such a great collection of all of these experiences of motherhood that are hardly ever spoken about, you know, talking about miscarriage, postpartum depression, postpartum body snapback, all of that. So that is available on all podcast players.
Okay, great.
And yeah, and you can also find me on all social media platforms at Aisha and Life. And my blog is at aishaandlife.com, where I speak about my honest journey in motherhood. And yeah, no, what is it called? No Holds Barred. yeah, and that's... I am on a mission to create safe spaces for mothers in particular to share their truths and just embracing their honest journeys in motherhood.
Fantastic. Amazing. Thank you so much.
Thank you. This was great.
This is a POC podcast
powered by Blue Blood.